I'd like to start with a poem by Mary Oliver.
I think we need the volume up a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Are you on?
Oh, maybe I.
Yes, you are.
No, you're not.
It all depends on what you mean by on, right? Okay. Wow. Now I'm on. Fully on. Entitled, Why I Wake Early. Hello, sun in my face. Hello, you who made the morning and spread it all over the fields and into the faces of the tulips and the nodding morning glories and into the windows of even the miserable and the crotchety. Best preacher that ever was, dear star, that just happens to be where you are in the universe to keep us from ever darkness, to ease us with warm touching, to hold us in the great hands of light. Good morning, good morning, good morning. Watch now how I start the day in happiness, in kindness.
So just let your eyes close and let's sit for a moment. And as you find your breath and open your heart and mind, call forth to be with us today all the people in the groups that you lead. Thinking of the people who work with you to lead your group, bring them into the room with us. And think of the people who are faithful and attend and help you. And whether you have a group or you are thinking of a group, think of the people who you would like to be included in a group with you. Invite them in. People who share an interest in waking up and opening their hearts and training their minds and finding less suffering and more peace and joy in their lives. Bring them into the room. And then bring into the room and into your heart the people who most have things to teach us, the people we call the difficult ones, who mirror our own shadows, our own attachments. The ones that teach us about aversion. And the ones who remind us of the great suffering there is in our world right now and in our community. And with all these people in our circle, be certain to include yourself. And bow to yourself for having come today, for caring about your community and your friends enough to take this time to train and learn how to be a leader, a facilitator, a group guide, or how to improve your skills in that area. There are many things you could have chosen to do today, and here you are. Honor your dedication to your own awakening and your willingness to give your time in this way. And then lastly, bring into your hearts and into this room all the wonderful volunteers who helped make this day possible, who support you and support Spirit Rock. The staff here at Spirit Rock, the teachers, the board, the Spirit Rock community, in whose hearts we rest today. So welcome to all of you. My name is Daniel Bowling, and I'm delighted to be here. I serve on the board of Spirit Rock as a volunteer, of course, like many of you. And I also am an attorney and mediator helping to run the mediation program at the U.S. District Court in San Francisco. I've been an attorney and a mediator for a long time, and mostly I'm from the East Coast. I spent many years on staff at Kripalu Yoga Center in Massachusetts. I was a yoga teacher starting in the 80s, the very first yoga teacher in Charleston, South Carolina, as a matter of fact, where I was also the first public defender. So I have a wandering path in my life. And it's because of this woman that I'm in California.
We you can all thank me for bringing you, Daniel.
And I was general counsel at Kripalu during a very challenging guru meltdown back in the 90s. So I have been part of a number of spiritual communities, and it's wonderful to be part of Spirit Rock, where things are much more solid and stable and much less weird. And I have, as you might imagine, facilitated lots of groups, and I hope that today I will be able to share with you what I've learned over the many years of doing that.
Thank you. And I'm Dana Curtis, and I've had a wandering path also, as many of us have who've lived as long as we have, I guess. But I wandered from northern Idaho, where there were three generations of my family born there, to law school, after having been a teacher for 13 years, to law school, to working in a big law firm, and then to beginning a mediation practice 22 years ago. Where when I decided that was really where I wanted to put my time and my education and my energy. And so that's what I've been doing since then, in various contexts, for the most part in my private practice as a mediator. And I taught mediation at Santa Clara for 5 years, Santa Clara Law School for 5 years, and Stanford for 10. And then I have been teaching mediation privately in many different contexts. So I've mediated about a couple thousand disputes by now, facilitated many groups and that sort of thing. But I'm very excited to be here. It's my first time teaching at Spirit Rock. I've taught over the years at at the Zen Center of San Francisco and their various centers, and have really appreciated teaching conflict resolution and conflict management skills to people who also have an interest in a practice in meditation. And it's quite a different conversation in the Zen Center, and I'm imagining here, from in a law firm or in a law school, although actually in law school I talked and taught meditation as well. So I'm very happy to be here and see what unfolds today. We have a plan that Daniel will talk with you about, but we also want to be responsive and to provide you with a meaningful day. So welcome.
So one of the underlying fundamentals of what we will do today is we will do what we're doing today exactly the way, let me say that better. We will teach and demonstrate what we will be teaching and demonstrating. In other words, if you see us acting in a way inconsistent with what we're teaching and demonstrating, please call us on it, because that's what I would invite anyone that I was facilitating to do. So just as we have begun, in the way we have begun with an introduction of ourselves, we will demonstrate everything that we would offer you to do.
We hope.
We hope.
It's our intention.
Right? Yes, yes. So what we're going to cover today. First, there are a lot of communication practices, and there are a lot of conflict resolution practices, but Dana and I have a fundamentally different approach to most of them that I have come across. And I believe that our approach is much more Buddhist in nature. And fundamental to it is that communication is not something I do. Communication is something I am. True, dharmic, authentic communication is a place of being. It is not a doing. Which is, without getting into some long fundamental philosophical difference, why I don't follow the path of nonviolent communication. That's a doing path, and that's fine. But the facilitation model that we offer and the conflict resolution model we offer is a place of being, a place of becoming. And my ability to be that when I'm in the midst of conflict is a focus of my practice and a focus of my facilitation practice. So there is an inner aspect to that, and there is an external aspect to that. And in our perspective, they must be, and it's important for them to be congruent. So we're going to present a very simple facilitation model today for a group meeting, a small group meeting, a small discussion process. And then we're going to talk about and give you an opportunity to practice three essential facilitation skills / communication skills / conflict resolution skills. In other words, they cross those three areas. One of them is structuring or contracting. Structuring is what we're doing right now. We're structuring this meeting by talking about the intention behind it, the place we're coming from, and outlining for you what's going to happen. That's part of what the skill of structuring is. How many of you have ever gone into a meeting where the people up front just start talking? You have no idea what the topic is, you have no idea what the agenda is, where it's going to go. If you've had that experience, you know that internally you start to get nervous and it feels unsettling and you're wondering where you are, and it ultimately begins to feel unsafe. Structuring is a very important skill for safety and connection. Then we're going to talk about the second skill is empathy and a particular model of empathic listening communication. It's a model that Dana and I use in all of our conflicts, all of our mediation processes. It's a very simple model and extremely challenging to do. It requires a great deal of mindfulness. So again, it's consistent with the practice of that we all are here fundamentally about. And then finally, the third skill we'll teach today is called reframing. And I won't say any more about that right now, but essentially it is how to take the sting out of communication while honoring the communicator and the message that they are giving. So our methodology is going to be constantly focusing on inner and outer awareness and experiential, less of us talking and more of us doing together. And as I said, we will follow the principles that we're talking about so that you can see them in practice. And then as we talk about them, you'll recognize what we've been doing.
All right. Ta-da! Well, Daniel sort of gave you a little hint about the agenda, but I wanted to start there. And then we'll talk about some guidelines for learning that we suggest that will support our development here as a learning community. But what we thought would be, right now we're sort of introducing you to the workshop, and then we're going to have an introductory exercise where we get to learn more about you and you get to think more about this subject matter, and we all get to know one another. And then Daniel will spend some time talking about the principles of authentic communication from a Buddhist point of view. And we'll, as Daniel said, provide you with a basic structure for a meeting that you can take into your groups, whatever they are, whether it's a very complex meeting or a very, you know, a 10-minute meeting with your staff or with your family, even depending on what happens. But just a basic structure about how that can help, and then structuring as a communication skill, and then again deep listening, and we'll do some exercise with that, have a little bit of fun with that, and then reframing, and probably half of the workshop will be on individual challenges that you have in the process of facilitating groups, sort of what is the thing that you really get the most afraid of when you're in the group and it happens, or what is your imagination about what could happen that would help the group fall apart, and what can we do about that? So we really want to support you to be able to apply some of these tools in a very specific way that is meaningful to each of you. And then... Oh, you can't see this.
Yes,
sorry.
If you get on the other side.
I can't really go very far.
Oh, you can't?
I'm sort of tethered here. That's why I moved it over to write on it. But, okay. And then... thank you. And then we have an exercise, and everything's falling apart here. Can you all hear me all right? My mic and mic scarf and the whole thing. I think I'll just take this off. So how does that sound? All right?
Good.
Good. Any questions about any of this while we're getting me dressed? My microphone. Okay, so these are the learning guidelines we thought about for this group today. And when we do this, we're really looking at how do we create an environment in which people feel a part of what's going on and not as if they're being taught to, but that they really enter in fully, both in the inner, as Daniel said, and in the outer experience of whatever it is that we're learning. But the first is to have some fun. So this is an afternoon. We're together in this beautiful place. All these people that are enthusiastic about learning and about the Dharma. And so that we really enjoy one another and spend some time getting to know at least one other person and hopefully many people that we've never met before and who share an interest in learning more about this topic. And then also that you welcome exploration and experimentation. And the way that we look at this is that this is a chance to learn some new things and then to apply them and to do it in any way that comes to you as a way of expressing yourself or practicing, and there's no such thing as making a mistake. In fact, if you're doing whatever we do in terms of the exercises perfectly, that's a problem. Yes.
It is being taped, I believe, yes.
Because I'm supposed to be somewhere at 3, and I didn't know about this until I came this morning and stayed all day.
Okay.
But
so you don't want to leave now. That's great. That's exactly what we want, and it will be taped. And also, I'll invite you. I think Daniel's and my contact information is in the brochure, or it's on the front cover here. If you want to follow up and ask questions after you listen to the tape, please say so. I don't know. Is Mariah?
There's handouts on the back table.
Yeah.
That's what they.
I was just thinking about the taping thing, and
I can speak a little bit.
Okay, great.
It will be posted on dharmaseed.org. So probably within a day or two, it will go on dharmaseed.org, right?
Thank you. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Good.
And if you don't have the handouts, hold up your hand. Mariah will bring you one.
So one of my favorite quotes about experimenting and entering fully in and not worrying about whether you make a mistake or not is that from the artist way, which is you can't look good and learn something new at the same time. So anyway, that's a problem if you're looking good. We'll be paying attention for that. And then we really do hope that you'll enter into an agreement with us that you will take one thing away from here that you will implement, not just in your meeting, but in your life. So be aware of what it is that's having meaning for you that you want to take away. And then confidentiality is really, feel free to speak about your experience and also insights that you have or things that you said or shared, but keep in this room things that other people said. So those are the guidelines that we think will support this group to form a learning community just for today. Any comments about this? Questions? Anything you'd add that would allow you to feel that you're in a very hospitable space for learning? No? All right. So, are you agreed?
Yes.
Anybody saying they're not all in? This is one of our big, you know, multi-party techniques, if we want to make sure that everybody's on board. Okay, great. Thanks.
Next.
Okay.
You're still going.
I still am. So now it's time to get to know each other. And this is, we have a group that's fairly large, and we could spend the whole day doing that, and then we wouldn't get to have an experience where you get not to look good, right? So so we want to make sure this is short. So we're asking you right now to, we assume that your name and just the town where you're from or where your group is, that's pretty easy to say in two words or three, first, last, and the name of your town. But would you just give, and these are one word, one quality that you have that you believe, inner quality, that will support your, or does support your being effective as a facilitator. And one skill that you possess, so that's the outer skill that you possess that will allow you or does allow you to be a good facilitator. And then what do you think you need to know? What is it that you'd like to be able to do better or to improve upon and develop? A quality, an internal quality, and then also an outward skill that you would like to develop to be able to be more effective as a facilitator. Okay, is that clear? So the way that it'll go is you have your name and the location and four words. And we'll know what order they're in, so you don't have to tell us, all right? And so if somebody forgets and goes into more than one word of each of these, then I have your agreement that I'll remind you to come back to the process.
Yes.
Okay. And that nobody's going to be embarrassed if I do that, right? Okay, good.
If we're embarrassed, we have the opportunity to not look good. So.
Yeah, there you go. So you get it over with really early. All right. Okay, that's great. So take just a minute to write these down. or have them clearly in your mind, and then we'll just start at one end of the room and go around really quickly.
And you're saying as a facilitator.
As a facilitator, right. That's what we're focused on. So.
And one word is not a sentence. It's just one word, right?
It is a sentence. It's a complete sentence, right? Yeah. Okay.
As opposed to a sentence, that's right. Is what I meant. Yes.
All right, great. All right, so Daniel, would you like to start?
Yes.
And then we'll just go around the room really quickly. How's that?
I wonder if we could have another minute or two.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's right. Otherwise, you're going to...
Actually, can you give us an example?
Okay, that's what we'll...
Yeah, that's good.
Sure.
Yeah.
Good. I'll start.
Well, this is perfect. See, you're really behaving like a learning community.
Curiosity. Verbal. Heart. Patience.
Okay, so take a second, just think about your internal and external skills and qualities, and just write those down.
I'm still having a little hard time between the quality and the skill.
Very good. So, a skill is something that I demonstrate externally. So I have a good verbal skill. A quality is a place I come from. It's the beingness of me, who I am. And mostly our education system focuses on what we know and what we do, our knowledge and our skills. It doesn't focus on who we are. And that's what our practice is about, becoming someone different. So as a facilitator, I have skills. I can organize, perhaps. I can invite. I'm warm and engaging with people. I reach out to them. I talk with them. I am courageous to invite people. That would be a quality. My warmth would be a quality. My ability to organize and invite and set up a meeting and send out information and do handprints and bills and email blast and things like that, those would be skills that I had. Do you have some other examples, honey?
The way that I think of it is just the quality is who I am. And what I possess inside, so it might be patience, as you said, or it might be respect or kindness or inner peace or the ability to the ability to really listen deeply and understand. And skills that I might have would be to be able to organize an agenda, to be able to move things forward, to be able to help people express things more clearly, or all of the things that I do out here, the way that I can manage a group or manage a process, or that I understand the process. Okay.
Yeah. Is that becoming clearer, or you still have questions? Someone.
Ultimately, what we'll end up with is a lot of qualities and a lot of skills that we put out there. And so getting it right doesn't matter so much as thinking about who we are and what we want to, what we bring and where we're confident and strong and where we feel less competent, so that we know where what kind of learning we're seeking. So that's the purpose of it. Okay, so should we start? In the very back, and are you in the woman in the pink sweater? I'm sorry, I don't know all of your names, but.
Are you ready to start?
Yes.
Are you willing?
Okay, great.
Oh, good. See, in the first people that go, you can copy everything they said.
But then you can say, oh, they already said everything. And actually, you know, that is maybe something that we should think about. I think that if you could, yeah, go ahead.
Bring the page back.
Yeah. Oh, right. All yeah, right. He's going to write down, but I'll let you do the writing on your thing. Okay, go ahead.
Hi, my name is Josie, and the quality I have is honesty, depth, and determination. And the skills I have is sincerity, I like to coordinate things, as well as I'm pretty genuine. And the quality to develop is focus and verbal, as well as the skill to develop is clarity.
Okay, thank you. Good. So what? Maybe from this point, pick the top one. And I'll just do this. All you have to do is say the word. How's that? And then we'll save a little bit of time.
Good.
Yeah, that's good? All right, so next.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Krishna. Krishna's my name. Town of birth is Winchester. It's one word, right? Sorry. Krishna, Winchester. Equanimity. Friendly. Fearlessness. Enlightenment.
Thank you.
Very nice.
Enlightenment.
Go for it.
That'll probably happen today. We might as well be ambitious, right? We'll check in later if you're still here. Okay.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth, and I have empathy, and I'd like to develop presence. I have organizational skills, and I'd like to develop more boundaries.
Thank you.
And I'm Renee, and the quality I have is kindness, and then the skill I have is good listener. The quality developed is patience, and the skill is not interrupting.
Thank you.
Very nice, thank you.
I'm Tony from Berkeley. Empathy, heart, communications, and belonging.
Oh.
Thank you.
Rick Davis, acceptance, listening, trust, and patience.
Thank you.
Grant from Mill Valley. Courage, innovation, heartfulness, non-judging.
Jacob Martin from Healdsburg, and I've got empathy, NVC, patience, and tolerance.
Thank you.
I'm Rose. I live in Guerneville, and my groups are in Santa Rosa. Let's see. Not busy, and I keep myself not very busy. Hmm. Listening is a skill that I practice. Quality to develop. Kindness, heart. Hmm. And skill is speaking up more instead of just listening, which in itself is powerful.
Thank you.
I'm Ghidra from El Cerrito. My quality is belief. Skill is perseverance, equanimity. I would like to develop, and compassion to develop.
Thank you.
How about get the people behind you?
Hi, Sarah. Okay, so kindness, setting an agenda, confidence, and...
Did you say confidence?
Confidence, quality develop, confidence. Mm-hmm. And I guess experience.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Courtney from Orinda. Interested, friendly. It's embarrassing. Discipline and organization.
Thank you.
I'm Daphna from San Anselmo.
and it's creativity, research, focus, and implementing.
Thank you.
Did you say research?
Yeah.
As a skill.
Mm-hmm.
Terrific.
Brenda from Fairfield, presence, empathy, confidence, and creativity.
Thank you.
And I'm Marianne. I'm from Woodacre. I have interest. I'm good at organizing, developing openness, and assertiveness.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Tina, and it's curiosity, analytical, discipline, and patience.
I'm Annie. I am warm. I'm organized. I need to develop patience and verbal clarity.
Thank you.
We've got another row to do.
Sorry.
Eve from Fairfax, genuine, focused, patience, and organization.
Thank you.
Dara, East Bay, compassionate, organized, patience, and listening.
Karen from Berkeley, understanding, communication, openness, and verbalization.
Thank you.
Lisa from Sebastopol, quietness, organization, curiosity, and communication.
Beverly from Sebastopol Occidental, compassionate, organized, confidence, and deep listening.
Mm-hmm. Melanie Lafayette.
Can you hold the microphone closer so we can hear?
Melanie Lafayette, caring, empathetic, reliable, non-judgmental.
Just go across that way, Melanie. Oh, you've already gone? Oh, right, okay. Sorry about that.
Kate, San Rafael.
Stan.
Kate, San Rafael, soft-hearted, persevering, self-love, organization.
This way.
Help.
That was very organized, actually, of you to go to make a decision, right?
Flavia, curiosity, interest, trust, and simplicity.
Lord help me. Angelia, the Dominican, San Rafael, open heart, passionate peacemaker. Creative motivator, enthusiastic, organizing. Are we at?
Are we here?
I want a quality to develop. Organizing.
Quality develop, right there.
That I need to develop.
Got it.
I need to develop organizing and computer skills. Mm-hmm. And.
Yeah, it's very. Yeah.
And also. Skill to develop. I want to more mentorship and more discipline.
Okay, thank you. Brad.
Brad from Arinda. Playfulness, leadership, compassion, and listening.
Thank you.
Julie from Tiburon. Receptive, analytical, compassion, wise listening.
Thank you.
Karen from Hercules, kind, listening, discipline, and sorry, I didn't write it down. Skill to develop. Oh, non-judging.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Sorry.
Fran from Hercules. Interested, service, I think warmth, and leadership.
Thank you. Julia Petaluma. Attunement, listening, relaxation, extension out into the world.
Thank you.
Linda from Petaluma, caring, organized, allowing, and verbalizing.
Mm-hmm. Lawrence, altruism, compassion, confident, trust.
Thank you.
Tarnay. I'm from Novato. Minor.
Closer.
Energy, creativity, heart, and community.
Augusta, San Francisco. Curiosity, deep listening and sharing from the heart. Compassion and inclusiveness.
Joseph San Leandro, calm, listener, compassion, presence.
Stacy from Petaluma, kindness, organization, equanimity, and clarity.
What was the last one?
Clarity.
Clarity, thank you.
Hi, Heather from Petaluma, and engaging, organized, equanimity, and patience.
Hi, Jocelyn from Santa Rosa. I have openness, deep listening, confidence, and organization.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Brigitte. Empathy. First, good listener, to develop equanimity and discipline.
Thank you.
Janine from Novato, caring, expressiveness, acceptance, and patience.
Margarita, San Pablo. So I have, I think, compassion, perseverance, and then develop confidence and world clarity and verbalization.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Katya, and my groups are in Berkeley and Marin County, and courage, well-organized, compassion, networking.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Michael from the Big Island, and I have some groups on the Big Island.
You came a long way.
I'm migrating.
For an afternoon.
Right. Also, Ohio and Michigan, I have some groups. And the qualities there, calmness, deep listening, friendliness, patience, and trusting time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
Good. Well, those are all things to aspire to, but it was...
Can you do yours?
Oh, all right. So my quality is enthusiasm. That's deep listening, balance, and balance. Okay.
So I started off my career as a communicator, as I said a little while ago, as the first public defender in Charleston, South Carolina in the 70s. Communicating to a jury that didn't respond and sat silently was a very interesting style of communication. And cross-examining people, not for the purpose of getting to the truth, but more for the purpose of shaping a story that would convince a group of silent people of your client's innocence. Very different kind of communication. And then I got into yoga and ended up teaching at Kripalu Yoga Center. And one day, it was a Sunday afternoon, I had completed a 5-day relationship training experience with about 150 people. And among those 150 people was a young man that I had identified as being just a little shaky mentally, not well grounded. Something was going on, but I wasn't sure exactly what. And I was in my room at Kripalu, exhausted from 5 days of facilitating 150 people. And I get a knock on the door, and I don't remember the young man's name, but I'll call him John. John had apparently freaked out, had streaked naked across the main chapel at Kripalu and caused quite a disturbance, and was in his room refusing to come out and refusing to go and seek mental help of any kind. And it turned out that his brother was a cook and a volunteer there and lived at Kripalu and was on staff. And his brother, of course, was quite concerned about him, and so were the other staff people, because they didn't want him streaking out around the building, and they also didn't want an ambulance coming up and the sheriff and people taking him away. So you face challenges with your groups, true? And when you teach and facilitate, sometimes you have a challenge. So I had a challenge. They came to me and knocked on my door and said, "Daniel, we need your help with John." Now, I'm not a therapist, I'm not trained. Just think for a minute, what would you do? I'm not going to ask you, but just think for a minute, what would you do? So take your hand out and turn to the page that says the Eightfold Path of Mindful Dharmic Communication. One of the reasons that we're messed up in our culture about communication is that the only way we teach it in our educational institutions is in the form of public speaking, advertising, promotion, those forms of verbal, externally aimed communication. That's what we call communication. We don't teach conflict resolution. We don't teach relationally based communication. No wonder we're so weird. So over the years, starting with my beginning as a public defender and going through all the time at Kripalu and since as a mediator, I have really studied communication. And these eight principles are grounded in this space. Communication is not something I do. It is a place from which I come. So I go to John's room, and I have to come from a place to be with John in a different way in order to help him get through whatever crisis he's in. And Kripalu bought many years ago a former Jesuit seminary a rather large one that's in the Berkshires in Massachusetts, if you've never been there, quite large building. But the monk cells are the basic rooms that you stay in. And they're small, but like a college dorm room, only smaller. They have a sink and a bed and a little closet, very much like our rooms here at Spirit Rock. So John was in that room, and when I opened the door, there were people outside making sure he didn't get out. And when I opened the door, he was naked, standing on the bed, using his white jockey short underwear to wash the walls. So, look at the first wise view. Giving up certainty and moving into the unknown with curiosity. Voltaire once said, "Uncertainty is very uncomfortable, but certainty is absurd." If you've just gone through the political climate we've just been experiencing, you saw certainty squared, multiplied over and over again. So when I walked into that room, I had to give up certainty. I didn't know what to do. I had no clue what to do. And if I had known what to do, I would have come from a different place, a place of knowing. And that would have clashed with John, and no communication is possible. So when you're facilitating a difficult person in your group, if you go immediately into what you know and how you know things should be, you're creating a resistance that a difficult person is going to really mess with you around. Giving up certainty. The intention, the wise intention in this Eightfold Path is to belong to the conversation. When I walked into the room, I definitely didn't belong there. I didn't belong naked, washing the walls with my jockey underwear. I couldn't imagine that, and I didn't know what to do. And I remember I was incredibly nervous, very shaky, but I realized that the people outside and John were in trouble. I had to do something. So I took a deep breath and wondered, how can I belong to this conversation? So I stripped off my clothes, and I took my underwear, and I said, "Where is it dirty?" And I wet my underwear in the sink, and he pointed there, and I got up on the bed, and I started washing. And that's all I said. And I washed, and he pointed other places to wash. So how do you practice wise speech in that perspective? You allow the truth to emerge. One of the biggest oxymorons of our time is my truth. Let me tell you my truth. When somebody says that to me, it's like fingernails grating on a chalkboard. The Buddha taught us over and over again the changing nature of phenomena. And how the more mindful we are and the more present we are, we see the incredible changes of phenomena. So to think that I own the truth or any part of it is the height of hubris. And especially in a communication, if I'm communicating with Heather, she has something that's different from what I have, and the truth lives between us. To whatever degree we're willing to belong to the conversation and give up certainty, the truth will then emerge, and it will be a shared recognition. So I had to allow the truth of the conversation with John to emerge. And then what's the wise action? The selfless nature that we are, the common humanity. At first, I was very judgmental. This is really weird. Why am I doing this? This is incredibly strange. I was up here and he was down there. And it took me a while to let go of that and consciously recognize he was feeling that. He could feel it. And I had to be with him in a different way. So we started chatting about what got him into washing the walls. And he said it had been bothering him the whole time he was there. And I said, well, I'm glad we're getting to clean them off. And then I said, he had streaked the main chapel, I think I told you. And I asked him, what possessed you to take off your clothes and run through the main chapel? And he told me the story about doing that. And I found it incredibly humorous, and I started laughing. And he laughed too. And we had a lot of laughs about that. And so, wise livelihood. How do I live and be in communication, in development? If I know I'm not in development, I'm certain. If I allow myself to be in development with intention, then I can grow and move with the group. I can grow and move when I'm caught in a difficult conversation with Julie. I can be framed by what she says and touched by what she says and open to it. And I don't come from a place of I'm the one who knows and you're the one who doesn't know and let me teach you. There's no development that happens from that space. Development happens from the space of openness, allowing the truth to emerge, to belong to the conversation with all of your being, and to let go of certainty. Because we don't have certainty anyway. It's just an illusion that we think we do. And so I asked John, how many times have you freaked out like this? And he started to tell me the number of times he had done it, that he had streaked the street in his neighborhood, and he had gotten in trouble in college for doing it, and he had had a history of doing that. And we got into a more serious conversation then, and then both of us sat down on the bed. And you have a question, Augusta.
Yeah. Did you really say freaked out?
Yeah.
Did he bring that, or did you bring that?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, somehow in the conversation that came out. And he told me times we had done it.
He had suggested that he was freaking out, or if you brought that to the conversation.
I don't remember exactly, but that was the space of it, because he told me the stories of running down the street naked. And again, I found them humorous at that moment, and so did he, and we were both laughing. In fact, at one point, we were laughing so much we were both crying about some of the things he did. And all this time, he was calming down, and so was I. I noticed that I was calming down, I was much less nervous, and so was he.
Thank you very much.
So, what is the wise effort of the Eightfold Path of communication? Thinking paradoxically. Mostly we live in an either-or world. It's my way or your way. In reality, as the Buddha taught us over and over again, the truth is both and. It's a paradox. Everywhere we look in life, everything is a paradox. Day could not be possible without night. We're in here because there's an out there. Everything that is in a paradoxical relationship with something else. We don't live that way, however, and we definitely don't communicate that way. If we did, the world would be a very different place. So I had to accept that my sanity was at that moment balanced by John's insanity, and I had to find a way to bring that paradoxical relationship into balance. So it occurred to me to ask him how long it had been since he had eaten. And it had been quite some time. And he said he had been doing a lot of drugs before he came, and he had stopped cold turkey, and that he hadn't eaten in several days. So I began to get a sense of why he had freaked out. And I opened the door of the room and said, get me some brown rice and steamed vegetables quickly, here. And John and I continued to talk. So what is the mindfulness, the wise mindfulness of an authentic communication? Listening deeply and empathically for the underlying fundamental issues in any conflict or conversation. Dana's going to focus on that in a minute. Listening to him in a non-judgmental, connected way. not talking, trying to talk him out of his place, not trying to convince him to do anything, just listening to him. I got the whole story of his life and all the times that he had lost it and gotten unbalanced. They all came out. And then finally, the eighth path, the concentration, the wise concentration, listening for themes. In your groups, when you have challenging people that you're working with, or just all the people that come together, there will always be a theme to the evening that you're together. There will be a theme to any meeting you facilitate. Just like there's a theme to the movie that you watch, and just like that awful English teacher that you detested would say, read this novel and then write a paper telling me what the theme of the novel is. And we hated it. There's a theme. So concentrating and listening for the theme, and with John, the theme was certainly balance. He had become completely unbalanced in his life. And I needed to emphasize and bring out that balance. So about that time, the brown rice and the steamed veggies arrived, and we sat together while he ate. And as he ate, his energy came down and calmed down, and we talked together over the options, and he agreed that it would be best for him to go and have an evaluation and see if he needed to start taking his medication again, etc. Everybody relaxed, and he and I walked out together into a car, clothed. We did put our clothes on. Thank you. Thank you, friend. Without underwear. The underwear was a little wet, and it was cold in the Berkshire, so. But we walked out, and he got in a car. We didn't even need to have an ambulance with his brother and drove him to the hospital. Now, that's obviously an extreme version. But it, I trust, perfectly emphasizes for you the process here. Now, these are not skills to, let me start that again. These are principles to live into. Choose one and work on it for a while until it starts to emerge for you with some life. Choose what it means to live into uncertainty and to enter into conversations from a place of uncertainty. Just start with that and see the difference in your communication until you take that. And then when you have that one, start to work on another one. So the rest of our time is going to focus on less contextual aspects and more practical aspects. But we wanted to give you the context from which Dana and I work, and offer it to you because of your practice and in respect for your practice. Mindfulness, as those of you who have practiced a long time know that when we start, it's all about just focusing on our breath. And then our awareness starts to open up and we see nuances in what's happening with our breath. And then our awareness starts to open up even more. And we begin to see nuances in the effect of the breath on our mind and on our body and on those around us. And it starts to open up even more. And our mindfulness extends to being present with other people, even when we're not sitting on a cushion or on a bench in meditation. Communication is exactly the same. It's a place from which we come.
Thank you, Danielle. I hadn't heard that story for a very long time. Oops. Forgot my mic. I hadn't heard that story for, yes.
A question?
Yeah, thank you. I'm Grant from Mill Valley.
Yes.
And these really are very well done and fit for me, except for wise effort, which I'm needing a shoehorn to relate the idea of both and to the how I understand
right effort of being more of an energetic quality of matching the energy to the moment. And so I just wonder if you could say a little bit more and help me to link that in better.
Because I believe that we are so stuck, mostly unconsciously, in an either-or world, that it really takes an effort, a modulated effort for certain, to notice that, oh, I'm in a conversation with Dana about where we're going to dinner or what movie we're going to see, and I'm caught in that either-or-ness. Or we have some miscommunication and we're arguing with each other about it, and there I am caught. For me, that's the most effortful of these principles. So it felt right for me for it to be there. It might not be, because I have to admit that this just this is a work in progress for me for many years. It has shifted and morphed in many ways. But of all of these, that's the one that, for me, requires the most conscious effort.
Thank you. That's useful.
Any other questions? Sorry that I didn't ask for that before. Yes, ma'am.
I just want to make a comment. That was really an original thing that you did.
That was really original. And I thought, you must have been doing this for a long time to come up with that. That's pretty, I think you're brilliant.
Original.
I would have never thought you mean to take my clothes off.
In the room with John.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'd never done anything like that before. But
Wow. It
came from exactly what I was saying. I didn't know what to do. I was uncertain. I knew I had to belong there. I couldn't come in as an outsider dealing with him, because all these people had been trying to get him to do stuff unsuccessfully.
It's like you met him. You just met him.
Yes.
Where he was.
Right where he was.
Yes.
And he went, okay,
yes.
I'm here.
Yes.
That's so cool.
That's communication.
One of my teachers, Tony Roffers, who's a therapist and teaches empathy to therapists, and also I studied under him for about 6 years, or 4 years, every 6 weeks with some other mediators. And he uses the term emotionally hired you. And I think John emotionally hired you because you showed up, you were present, you were curious, you went all of the things that you went through. And I'm going to segue that to another far less sort of innovative, imaginative, creative, original approach, which is it's almost the opposite, actually. It's having a structure in which to help people feel safe and to help people learn and to be in a meeting in a way that allows them to feel that you're holding them as the facilitator, so that something can get done, or that learning can occur, or that there's room for them to be there in whatever shape they're in, with whatever they need to learn and whatever level of development that they have. But this was a lesson that I had to learn as a mediator, and you know, when people are in conflict, it's very messy. Not that you've ever had that experience, but it does. We don't sit there thinking, now how am I going to address this? And what's the first step? And what's the second? And it feels overwhelming, and people feel lost. And when they come to a mediator, they need, they're looking for help. And one of the things that is the most simple that we can do is to provide a container for their conflict, and pulling away from the conflict, just to extrapolate, to provide a container for the decisions that need to get made or the learning that needs to occur. And as a facilitator, we have the opportunity to create that for people. And so we've given you a structure that we think is might be useful to you. I really heard many of you saying, I need more confidence, I need more sort of courage, I need more of something. And for me, this kind of awareness that there's a way we can organize things that I can feel competent in, you know, understanding and being able to help people create, it gave me confidence. You know, the opposite of that, as Daniel says, everything's paradoxical, is being rigid. And so I don't want to say this is the answer and this is how you have to do it and learn this and do it and everything's going to be fine. So it's, but to and also to let you know that it looks pretty clear, right? You just move from one step to the other, which I'll go over, and that's really not the way that it happens either. So there is more fluidity, but I think having a structure will help you to be able to create that container for what's going to happen. How many of you are actually Kalyana Mitta facilitators? Raise your hand. So, okay, so about a third of you, and the rest of you have this, you know, this will be information that you can implement in school board meetings or parent meetings or all of these other things. So that it'll apply in any case. But I did gear it a little bit toward what I imagined would be useful to Kalyana Mitta groups. And it begins with the intention, which I think everything begins with an intention. All action really proceeds from an intention. And what the intention that we propose for the learning groups is to create a learning community. You can think about this, whether it fits, but there, as opposed to creating or conveying a message, it's creating a community in which people can gather to learn and explore. And that as a facilitator, that's your intention from the outset. And so we've divided this into four sort of different categories. One is the organizing the group. So before you actually meet, thinking about what it is that this meeting is about and how what the roles are, what the purpose of the meeting is, and in a general sense. And that would be to, you know, that when you're either thinking about it with yourself, if you're going to be setting up a meeting, which sometimes that does happen, or working with others, it's to really work collaboratively to understand what people need and to help to create the kind of container that will really address that or create the opportunity for learning, whatever that it is. So it's simply looking at basic things about the overall group purpose, and then the process, which is how often are we going to meet, when are we going to meet, what are the structures that we're going to observe, what are the roles and what is the agenda going to be. And so that's all that precedes sort of actually getting together, is really envisioning what the purpose of this is and who we're going to be working with and some of the very basic logistical things. The next is structuring the process. Maybe I can just pick this up. Yeah, there. All this effort. I'm not used to being constrained, shall we say. Oh, well, are you gonna? No, that's even worse. Thanks. I got it.
Okay.
Anyway, when you're in a meeting, actually, and we follow these steps briefly, but it's figuring out a way for the group to connect at the outset. And that could be everything from some sort of an ice-breaking exercise, an introductory exercise, helping them understand what the meeting's about. But it'll be either an extended or a very truncated process, but helping people enter in. And then describing the meeting structure and reviewing the agenda so people know what to expect. It's kind of like giving people a roadmap to where, what's going to happen. And people, when they have more understanding of what will occur and what their roles are, relax. And so you notice that at some point, very early, we started laughing together and having a little bit of fun and entering into a kind of community where things could be, where we could be happy and feel comfortable and belong, as Daniel said. And at the same time, looking at when you can enter in that way with people, that there is a way that you're emotionally hired to be the leader of the group. There's also another aspect here that operates just at our own sort of neurobiological level, which is that as you know, emotions are contagious, and it turns out that when we are in a group, the person who is perceived as the most powerful, and we won't go into what that means, is the person whose emotional state is most contagious. And so if you are taking a leadership role, the chances are that people are going to pick up on the way that you're feeling and the way that you're entering in. So if you're peaceful and relaxed in a number of the qualities that we talked about earlier, most of the time, most of the people who were there with you will feel that same way. On the other hand, if you're constricted and judgmental and all of the other things that you talked about, some of us wanted to be really, you know, in this area, in this category, if that's how you enter in, then that's, you know, that makes it, that creates some challenges. Not that those are surmountable, but it's a way of really creating a safe container, I guess is one way to say it. So, and then the roles and the structures and the guidelines and those kinds of things, to the extent that it's a more extended group where you're initiating it, is another way to work with the structure. Any questions so far about intention or just the basics, sort of setting things up ahead of time in terms of organizing the group or the structure of it? Yeah.
When you talk about emotionally contagious, qualities, are you talking about just like if you've got enthusiasm, confidence, and it kind of just bringing joy and stuff?
Yeah, so it could be it could be a very sort of, you know, all of the things that you're talking about, but it also could be that you're dealing with a very serious matter, and that being light and happy and that sort of thing isn't particularly, but it's really sort of being congruent with who you are, and being accessible and present to people, whatever way is going on.
Not just exhibiting positive emotions.
Not necessarily. No. I mean, it depends on where you are. Certainly, positive emotions create a more relaxed atmosphere, and for learning, it seems to me that that's a good way to be. But just to be aware that your emotional state and the way that you appear in a group context as a leader has a great impact on other people. And also, you know, I'll also say that we can't come into the room always in the perfect state for what everybody else needs. Sometimes we have things that are going on. And that the group then actually creates can change our own state in when we show up in a way that isn't as useful for our own learning, too. But thank you. Yes,
well, question. Karen. Just to like quickly follow up on what you just said, if you're in a state where you don't think, you know, say if you're the leader, but you're distracted or you're emotionally in a not so positive state, or you don't want to infect the group with your emotions, like would you advise just like sort of faking it or withdrawing, or turning over the leadership to somebody
else? Canceling the meeting. No. Well, one of the things that we did at the beginning is we had a meditation, and certainly depending on the context, if you can just even say, oh boy, I don't know about you, but I've been rushing and distracted, and could we just for a minute just take a breath? And be you know, thinking, just be here for a moment. And I've done that in mediations and contexts where I couldn't say, can we just have, you know, in Zen mediations and meetings, I say, can we just sit for about 3 minutes and just breathe? And, you know, just that will change your own nervous system. If that's not appropriate, do it out in the car before you get in. So, you know, say metta for people. Whatever works for you to really bring you present. It also might help to just acknowledge that that's what's going on. I've had a really hard day, and I want to be present, and so I'm just going to tell you that it's great to be here and to be, and that'll help too. Yeah. I saw some more questions. Yes.
You might have said this, and I was a little distracted. So you said the most powerful person is the one with the most contagious emotion.
Mm-hmm. Perceived as the most powerful. And so if you're facilitating a meeting, that, you know, you're leading the meeting, that would be maybe translated as power. Yeah.
Oh, so it's not any person in the group that has the most contagious emotion. It's the leader you're talking about.
Well, the leader is the person who would naturally be vested with power, right? I mean, not that you're going to be telling people what to do, but that would be it. And now, you've all been in meetings where the facilitator, there's somebody in the room who takes over the leadership. So it's all of a sudden the leader pulls back, and some of your things that you wanted to develop were more, you know, in the nature of that kind of strong sort of boundaries, or however you want to say it. So, you know, it can be possible that somebody who's not intended to be the leader can be perceived as the most powerful, and that might be a positive thing, and it might be a real problem.
Right. Yeah, I just didn't know if you were equating power with the most contagious or power with the leader.
Oh, power, it's just whoever is perceived as having power will be the more contagious. And
not the most powerful emotion. Contagious. I got
correct.
You.
Yeah. I got you. So it might so that the role itself as leader might convey that power, but it also may be that there's someone in the room who's struggling for power, and that could shift. Yes.
So on that same vein, mm-hmm. could you talk about roles? What you mean by roles?
So as you're organizing a group, are you talking about in terms of structuring?
Well, seek agreement on roles. I'm just wondering what you mean by that.
Well, it depends entirely on the group. But so who's going to be leading this discussion? Who's going to be giving a talk? You know, what are we going to have time for questions? And what is the role of people in the group? An example here is that I asked you to be active learners. And I had a set of guidelines that were, you know, designed to really help you feel like you're belonging to a learning community. So being a member of the learning community is a request that we made of you. So it's not, you know, just sit there and be quiet and let us teach to you. It's, you know, there's a way that that we've invited it. So, you know, in a Kalyana meeting group, what would be examples of roles?
Somebody who sends out the...
It might be somebody who does the closing, who agrees to do the dedication of merit. That could be different than the person who is the facilitator. Somebody else could have a role of emailing all members when the next group is taking place, and perhaps what the assignment is.
Right. So that would those and there could so the roles are relevant both in the organization of the group, but also in the group itself. In this group. You know, there's a time that you're going to be doing practicing, and we talked about, you know, working in actively, you know, in your own learning. So, yeah.
I'm in a group where we read, and each person reads a paragraph, and we mm-hmm. go around the circle, and some people choose not to, and some people choose to read the paragraph. And so that's an example of a role that people take.
So this is a really good example of how structure helps. So imagine walking into this group, and nobody says what's going to happen or introduces you, and all of a sudden you're sitting there watching people read paragraphs, but you didn't really know, am I supposed to read a paragraph because I'm new? So it's having a roadmap. And once I can do that and I hear someone say, now we're going to read, you know, first we're going to do something, and then we're going to read this one paragraph at a time, and if you don't feel like you want to read it, just pass it on. And all of a sudden I'm relaxed and I can enter in. Okay, other questions? I thought I saw another one. No. So then during the process of the meeting, you know, a facilitator, a person in that, you know, given... Let's say that there's an overall facilitator role in your group. Some of the things that you're doing are you're implementing an agenda. The group, when I showed you the agenda, I said, does that look okay? Yeah, okay, we're on board. So you've all given me some permission to keep you on track here with the agenda. And Daniel and I had an agreement about that agenda before we came in. Also to honor the group learning guidelines, and sometimes those are things like, you know, speaking for 2 minutes. I mean, sometimes you can get very specific on what those guidelines are. And then really, you know, being the one who's paying attention to those, that's, you know, you again, the role, and keeping people on them. And also being flexible within the purpose of the meeting. I mean, Daniel talked a lot about the, you know, that you really work with what is coming up. On the other hand, you know, you have an agenda. So how do you balance those things? And so creating flexibility within that and managing the discussions is part, we're going to spend more time on that this afternoon. But it's always a balance between teaching to the individual and as we've discussed in these with questions, and teaching to the room if you're teaching or answering the concerns of an individual in the room, but at the same time creating having an awareness of the whole group and how whatever's happening between you and me needs to be something that everyone in the room can benefit from, and an awareness of that. And then listening for meaning and underlying and the underlying sort of intention behind things can often help you do that and really get at what the question might be or what appears to be a distraction might be. Getting at that can really help you keep two on track. And then allow time for individual reflection and also small group discussion and also the large group discussion. And being aware that people have very different needs and very different ways that they feel safe and they feel mentally competent, actually, to enter into a discussion, and we're all different about that. Some people can speak and think at the same time. Other people, remember when we started and I started too soon? When we started with the exercise about name four words, and some of you said, whoa, wait a minute, I need a little more time. But other people were ready. You could have done it just on the fly. So it's, you know, everybody's different, and keeping in mind that you need in meetings to create an opportunity for people to be thinking in different ways and at different speeds and engaging in ways that work for them. And then, what we're doing is we're inviting engaged participation. And I didn't mention the word hospitality earlier, but I happen to think that that's really a big role in a big part of the facilitator's role is to create, to be a host and to welcome guests. And that doesn't mean that you're above your guests or bossing them around or whatever, but just helping people enter in a way that they feel welcomed and welcome to participate and welcome into the atmosphere. And in terms, then, you know, after you've been done your business, especially if you've been going over, and one of the things that we recommend is watching your timelines. But if you have, oftentimes we are not very good at ending meetings in a way that makes the most of them. And so in the concluding phase, really summarizing whatever the agreements are that you made and whatever the commitments that you've made going forward, so that people will remember what they need to do next and also remember what they've done during the meeting. And then plan for and remind them about what is the next thing or the next step. And then the last is really creating an opportunity for acknowledgement and recognizing and gratitude for the way that people have participated. And that can, especially in a meeting where there's been some difficult conversation, it can really make a big difference. You know, in a small meeting, for example, what is one thing that you appreciated that occurred here today? And one thing, everybody did, if you wanted to get that specific. And the intention here is really, again, to reinforce the hospitality and also to invite people to really invite them back, for continued participation. So this is just a basic sort of overall structure. Do you have any questions about any of it so far? That's your container and how it gets created. And then whatever happens in there, as Daniel talked about, the quality of the conversation depends on many other things. Fran?
I don't know if we'll get to this later, have a chance to sort of swap what works and what doesn't work, but in terms, we're just beginning one at our home on Wednesday evenings.
Our home. Well, there you go. You're all ready.
Yeah. So I'm kind of wondering about leadership. One idea that I think I had read on the website was the idea of perhaps shared leadership versus having one person who's continuous in that role.
So there, you're at organization of the group. So because you're leaders, you can structure, you can prepare a structure for it and assume the leadership role for this discussion about how are we going to work together. Yeah, and that's a wonderful model.
Do you have any other suggestions for the very first meeting? Like, I mean, because obviously it's...
Well, first of all, relax, and it's wonderful that you are doing this, and think of yourselves as hosts. I mean, often what happens for me as a mediator, a teacher, or anything else, if I get too much into I am the role, I forget who I am as a person. And so you are hosts, and you're inviting people in for conversation about a particular topic, and we've given you some guidelines about how to structure that so that people feel more comfortable and more welcome and invited into it. But I think maybe what I would suggest is that during the break that you connect with other people who could give you specific ideas about how they did the first meeting in this context, and if you want to talk about that further. We can certainly talk about that further if that's something that's of interest to everybody. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So let's do. Why don't we have a break right now, and maybe if you want to...
Before, there are some announcements that need to be made, and Melanie, you're going to make the announcements? Is that it? So... Oh, you've got a microphone.
Yeah,
okay.
Mike. Thank you. Just a few announcements here. In case anybody has missed it, there's a sign-up on the table just to the left of the door as you're coming in for Dana and Daniel's email, if you're interested in that. And Ghidra, please raise your hand. Ghidra and I are the volunteers who coordinate the Kalyana Mita Network for Spirit Rock. And we would love to have your suggestions about upcoming workshop topics. So if you would like to meet with us, Ghidra and I will be back by the refreshments table here during break to talk to people either about Kalyana Mita in general or about new topics or, you know, anything like that. We'd love to talk to you. We are offering some refreshments. There's brownies and cookies at the back table, and there's tea out in the foyer. So if you'd like to go out there and do that, you may. And I wanted to say that Katya, who's raising your hand?
Yes, I just wanted to invite people to two groups have just started, one in Berkeley and one in San Rafael, that are Satipatthana Sutta study and practice groups for intermediate practitioners, that is to say people who have established a practice. And please talk to me during the break if you're interested.
Okay. And
Is there going to be an opportunity for people who want to create a group? Like, I'm from Petaluma, and I would love to be part of it.
Please come talk to Ghidra and I at the back there at the break.
There's quite a large number of people here who are in the Petaluma, Rohnert Park, Novato area, and I would suggest you meet over in that corner because there's many of you.
All right. And then the last thing I wanted to do is really very important here. I wanted to talk to you about Dana. I think probably many of you are familiar with this concept. Dana is a donation. I guess that's probably the closest definition I can give from it. But it's an ancient tradition in teachings of the Dharma, which is considered to be priceless. Today, Daniel and Dana have offered to do this wonderful workshop for us at no fee. Even with fees, the expenses at Spirit Rock just barely cover the expense of running a workshop like this. And so I would like to ask you to consider making a contribution to the Dana basket, which is right outside the front door here for Dana and Daniel. This is an opportunity for all of us to really participate in the Dharma and an age-old tradition of generosity, which is one of the really foundational pieces of Dharma practice. And I would encourage you, as you're considering making a Dana donation, to really think about what your intention is as you do this. Think about how you're participating and really give it some mindful thought as you do that. So anyway, those are the announcements. Yes?
Is it the dana going to be split? Is it two baskets, one for the spirit and one for them, or is it going to be one?
I think that there are two baskets out there.
Okay.
A volunteer that's been sitting there?
No. There's one. There's one, and it's split between Spirit Rock and our teachers today.
Okay.
So did everybody hear that? There's one basket, and the donations, the dana, will be split between Spirit Rock teachers and the Spirit Rock facility. Thank you. And how long of a break are we taking?
15 minutes. It's just almost 3:15, so come back a little bit before 3:30. Running behind, but it's okay.
It's combining, so doing the listening and having them do the listening exercise on what's the fear, biggest concern, fear.
Fabulous. Oh, fabulous, yeah.